They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
WBR-FM Fairfax,
a service of Fairfax Public Access and Cox Communications.
94.5 Cable FM,
Cox Cable Channel 37,
Comcast Cable Channel 24.27,
and broadcasted to the world in real audio at FCAC.org.
WBR-FM Fairfax.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew. And joining us on the Commons today is Mark Benson. Mark is a community association manager. He's the former owner of a management company, and I guess he managed a number of associations. He has since sold that, and he's very active in Florida and with associations management and with legislation. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Mark, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know before we went on the air, before we started recording this, you've got a number of credentials to your name.
Yeah, I've been involved with community associations for over 30 years, originally being on the board of our first homeowner association in Illinois many, many years ago. Then when we moved to Florida, we had a condominium that we owned down here since 1975, and then we moved into a condominium community in 1981, and my wife Sandy and I have lived in it since 81. I was on the board, the original board from the developer during turnover. We went through construction defect litigation, a lot of growing up during the early 80s as far as community associations are concerned. I started managing community associations in 81, and then when Florida put their licensing in 87, I was, you know, one of the original managers that was licensed in 88, which was the first year of licensing. And I've been fortunate enough to be involved with legislation and several of our state legislators as far as working on Florida community association law, 718, the Condominium Act, 720, the Homeowner Association Act, and 468, Community Association Management. We originally got, after getting the community association managers licensed in 88, we soon discovered that jurisdiction under the Bureau of Condominiums was not the proper place for community association managers. The issues seemed to be in conflict, so we lobbied for and got what is called the Regulatory Council for Community Association Managers under the Division of Professions.
Is that the OPAGA that we hear about so much?
No, OPAGA is actually an investigative arm of the state of Florida. And it's an investigative bureau that goes in and analyzes the operations of a particular agency to see if they are fulfilling their legislative charge.
Okay.
So they're kind of the watchdog. if we have problems, we'd call APAGA to come in and take a look at it and give their recommendations.
How well does APAGA work?
The limited access they've had in community association stuff, they seem to be very effective. But one of the things is that by the time they come out with the report, the bureau or the division that they are investigating comes out with a whole bunch of initiatives and says, hey, we're going to do this, this, and this, and this, and kind of heads off the APAGA report.
Oh, I see. So, because I've heard some complaints about the APAGA, you know.
Yeah, and then APAGA has to sit back and wait and see if they do it, and 2 years later, everybody forgot what they said. So,
and so nothing happens. You start from scratch again, right?
Well,
sort of.
You can't say nothing happened. At least there was some awareness of it.
No,
hopefully the legislator took note of it.
Well, you've had some good legislation. We'll get into that in a little bit. But I want to continue talking a little bit about you. You told me ahead of... One of the first things you said to me before we went on the air here was that we've got to be realistic that associations are not going anywhere, and the thing to do now is to make sure that you protect the owners.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, I think we have to be pragmatic and understand that community associations are here, and we have boards of directors, and we have managers, and we have to try to build our structure of associations to protect the public. And that's what the basis of licensing is for community association managers, should be to protect the public. And we sometimes lose sight of that in the day-to-day operations of the community associations and all the personalities that get involved in it.
Yeah, we do. That's kind of a big problem. You've got some proposed legislation, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But when you owned your company, you owned your company for how long? How many years?
Let's see, 23 years.
So you were actually property management company owner for 23 years then.
Right. And one thing we want to make sure is that people do realize is, though, the big difference between property management and community association management. You know, that's one of my pet peeves.
Explain the difference to me.
Okay. In community association, well, let's see. I've got community association management is, as opposed to property management. Property management is a real estate function, which in essence is managing a property for a principal for a profit.
Okay.
Which is kind of contrary to what we're doing for community associations, because what we're doing here is acting as the operating officer for the board of directors to protect the investment of our owners and to help them operate their associations based upon the standards and policies that they've established in their documents and the policies and procedures that have been adopted by their boards. So it's a lot more complicated and a lot more responsibility in community association than it would be in property management.
Okay, you told me earlier that you're a real estate licensee.
I happen to be a real estate broker too. I really don't do any real estate work though.
Yeah, I used to be as well, so I know what you mean about property management in terms of, you manage the rentals for the owners.
There's a good definition online. As far as a property manager that I've seen, it says they can be in charge of advertising empty units, dealing with rent issues and tenant complaints, signing and renewing leases. They're charged with operating a real estate property where the owner is unable to personally attend to the details, as opposed to community association management, which means, according to the law and Florida statutes, any of the following practices requiring substantial specialized knowledge, judgment, and managerial skill when done for remuneration, preparing budgets, other financial documents for the association, assisting in the noticing or conducting of community association meetings, coordinating maintenance for the residential development, and other day-to-day services involved with operation of the community association.
Okay, that's infinitely more complex and complicated than making sure that you hire a plumber to come in and unplug a stuffed toilet, or making sure that you collect the rent and managing the thing. But as a property manager, you're licensed as a realtor, and they can really
in most jurisdictions, yes.
Yeah, and they can really go out. That's true. And they can really go after you if you don't fulfill your duties. As a CAM, you're managing millions and millions of dollars worth of stuff, and yet the state is very reluctant to get involved and make sure that you are doing what you're doing or what you're supposed to be doing. And yet your responsibilities are infinitely greater. And I guess, and there's no, in Florida and in Virginia anyway, there's no requirement to be licensed. Or is there one in Florida right now?
Yes. If in Florida the manager manages associations with more than 50 units or have an annual budget in excess of $100,000, they must have a license as a community association manager.
And
that's one thing we're trying to change.
I was going to say, I see you've crossed that out, and you don't want that in there.
In our draft for changes, yes.
Right. So basically what you're saying is everybody has got to be licensed.
If they're handling other people's money, yes, and getting paid for it.
Even if you're talking about a real small association. I mean, I've heard of associations where you have two units, but I don't suppose that you'd need a manager for that. But
they probably don't have a manager, right?
No. but, I mean, I've heard of real small associations, units.
Sure. And they're the people that oftentimes need the protection. And if they're going to have a manager, there's nothing that says they have to have one. But if they're going to have one, the person should be licensed. They would have no way of knowing if that person is managing 10 associations of 45 units each and should be licensed and is operating outside the law.
Is there a requirement, let me ask you, Mark, is there a requirement in Florida to keep track of, by the state, to know who you're managing, or is that just entirely up to you?
There is no mechanism in the state that keeps track of who manages what.
You've had a lot of problems in Florida recently with embezzlement, although I think from what I recall the stories that came out were basically presidents and treasurers of associations that had embezzled.
Yeah, that seems to have been the latest news has been from board members rather than from managers.
Right.
I like to point to our manager system at least with that, because we do background checks and FBI checks and fingerprinting before anyone is given a manager's license.
Okay, we don't have that. One of the problems that we've had to deal with recently here in Virginia is where a management company, Coger Management Group, was caught with their having embezzled in excess of $2 million. I guess they're still investigating that.
Wow.
But
how many associations was that from?
That was a number of them, and again, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think more than probably a couple of hundred, including mine, by the way, including the one I live in.
Don't take it personally.
I won't. but the interesting thing is that the state would not get involved.
Even the state attorney? For embezzlement, huh?
And to even begin to investigate. The only way they were able to go after the company and investigate was by going into, because these people had a real estate license.
Oh.
And it was because they were licensed that the state got involved with investigating the issue. So I guess a license is more than just making the state rich, huh?
Well, let's hope so. Yeah. In those circumstances, were the associations insured?
I'm not sure what the fallout is right now.
Because that is a requirement in Florida that associations do have all their cash insured for the maximum amount that they'll ever have on hand at any one time.
What I do know and what I can tell you is that they dissolved the corporation and
the management company.
The management company and started right up under a different name.
Oh.
So they're still out there.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Now, that's one of the things, too, we're trying to get in Florida is we've got managing or we've got licensing of individual managers. We're trying to also license management companies because we have found somewhat the same situations in that we'll have somebody that starts a management company and hires what we call a sacrificial CAM to front it as a licensed manager. There are things that happen. A company goes out of business or they get in trouble, so they fire the CAM. The CAM gets in trouble and they go hire another one. You know, the management company has no responsibility, so we're trying to get management companies licensed to head that off.
I guess my question to you is that because of the licensing factor, then I think it would probably be a little bit easier to hold the states accountable or get them involved at least.
Once they're licensed, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because without a license, they're all saying, "Oops, you know, hands off." It's a contractual agreement. You guys got into it. You take it to court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a civil matter. Mm-hmm.
But, Mark, it would seem to me that if you're running a business that is on the up and up and it's legit and, you know, you're doing everything by the book, that you would not necessarily want some of this type of stuff going on because it gives the entire industry a black eye.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I'm pushing for it, too. And we have to change the culture in some of these things as far as licensing. Because there's a problem that I feel we have in Florida in that if someone is caught managing or performing management services without a license, they might fine them, but then all they have to do is apply for a license and
they'll
have
get it again.
Get one. Yeah. So that's like, you know, putting the fox in the hen house. And they say, well, then we can control them because they're licensed. Well, that's kind of ludicrous because they're going to do the same thing, and then you do take their license away, which is right back where they started.
What's involved in getting a license in Florida?
Taking educational courses as dictated by 468 as far as the number of hours, and then taking a test.
Who administers the courses?
There are several companies in Florida that give pre-licensure courses. It's very similar to real estate as far as getting a real estate license.
Okay, CAI?
I don't think CAI gives pre-licensure courses, no.
Oh, okay.
They give continuing education courses, but not pre-licensure.
Okay. You said that you're a CMCA, an AMS, a PCAM. You're also a state-certified mediator. Is that what you do now?
Yeah, county court mediator, yeah.
A county court mediator.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a requirement to go to mediation in Florida?
Typically, if an issue gets to court, the judge is going to order mediation. We do have an arbitration program in Florida for condominium disputes, and the arbitrators that run that program can order mediation. There's also a provision in the HOA's Act that provides that you must provide a notice of intent to file suit, which will trigger the requirement for mediation. So there's supposed to be, yes, there is mediation in Florida, and it's supposed to be used prior to the litigation. It's brand new just this last year as far as the intent to file suit and the required mediation for that.
When you mediate, do you mediate HOA cases?
Sure.
Oh, you do?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's no conflict there, huh?
Oh, no. No, no. If it had been one of my clients or something, of course, I think there'd be a conflict there. I'd have to bow out of that. But the theory of mediation is if both parties agree to the mediator, that's all that's necessary, as long as everyone agrees who the mediator is.
Okay, agrees to who the mediator is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And there's full disclosure, you know, on everything.
Well, disclosure, I'm beginning to learn, is not all it's cracked up to be here, Mark.
Oh, really? In what? In what areas?
Well, I've been involved in association stuff for a long time, way before we even had the disclosure requirements that there is an association. And when Virginia mandated disclosures, I thought, great, nobody's going to buy into these things as long as people understand what they're getting into. Well,
now you're talking about disclosure pre-sale disclosures?
Right, right.
Oh, okay.
Right. I'm sitting there thinking, you know, who's going to agree to this? You know, you're buying a house, you're paying all this money for it, and someone gets to decide what color your front door is, whether you have a pet, and if you do have a pet, how much it can weigh. And,
sure.
You know, no self-respecting person would agree to this, but what I discovered was that people do not really pay attention to the disclosure package.
Really?
They go in, well, you're a realtor. You're a realtor, Mark. You know that buying a house is an emotional purchase.
Oh, yeah, and especially Florida, you're buying palm trees and sunshine.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or you're buying somebody's couch that's in there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody's going to sit there and wade through stacks and stacks and stacks of stuff. They've fallen in love with the house, and they're going to buy the house. Besides, you know, I'm not going to do anything wrong. I'm sorry?
That's another one of my pet peeves, too.
Yeah. I'm not going to do anything wrong, so nobody's going to find me.
Right. Of course not.
I've got perfect taste. Why would anybody really do anything about that, right?
Yeah.
So,
but unfortunately, in Florida, condominium documents and HOA documents are considered to be a contract. And by buying in, you are agreeing to that contract.
That's right.
And it would be, my pet peeve that I think if anybody's entering into a contract, that should be forced to read every page.
Well, sometimes in Virginia, you have 72 hours to cancel.
Well, yeah, there's a rescissionary period in Florida, too, but that doesn't get it read.
And but what you have is something that looks like the Washington metropolitan area phone book.
Yeah. Right.
It's like hundreds and thousands of pages of legalese, gibberish, nonsense, dry as all hell. And you're excited about, you know, that big picture window that overlooks that wonderful view, and you're trying to figure out where you're going to get the curtains.
Sure.
You're not going to read that stuff.
And
meets
one of the
and bounds, and, you know.
One of the provisions that we're suggesting, but it's not in on the top of our list right now because it's much too involved, is revisions to 718 and 720 that would, in essence, standardize documents to the point where they're in plain English and make that a requirement of the law that they be in plain English, like they did with insurance policies. They pass a law that has to be in plain English and can't be 400 pages long. So if we can get into some kind of a standardization on those types of things, and as opposed to California, in Florida, documents don't have to be reasonable. In California, in their Sterling-Davis Act, there's a provision that says they must be reasonable, but not in Florida.
Yeah, but who determines what's reasonable?
The guy in the black robe.
Right, I know, and you don't want to go there. You don't want to go there. But, no, I agree with you, and it is my pet peeve, but I also think that maybe a way around it, and this is going to be really very cumbersome for the realtors, is if you're going to show them in any given subdivision that that before you even go into that subdivision, you ought to get them to read the governing documents. And if it's something they don't think they can live with,
sure,
then don't even go in and fall in love with the house.
But, you know, you're not going to get them to do it.
That's the only way, Mark, that I think the disclosures are going to be meaningful.
Yeah, I mean, not under the current legislation that we have. It's not going to be done. It's not going to get done.
No, it's not. And like I said, it's cumbersome because as an agent, you're hustling and you get someone who walks in and they say, I want 3 bedrooms, 4 walls, and the door, and it's got to have a fenced-in yard for my pooch. We don't bother to find out whether a pooch is welcome there.
No, and the thing is that the realtor is the agent for the seller, and it's not his responsibility to educate the buyer.
Well, that's kind of changing a little bit with your buyer's agents as well. Here we have buyer agents.
Yeah, we do here too, but
they're not
the majority.
Even as a seller, you know, I would think that you would want them to know what they're getting into.
Oh, yeah.
So they don't come back and sue you and say, hey, you didn't tell me that these people were unreasonable. You didn't tell me that the deck that you put on there that I absolutely fell in love with has to be taken down because it violates the governing documents. And that's happened, believe it or not. People buy a house, this house over that one, because it's got this wonderful deck, or it's got this fenced-in yard, or it's got whatever it is it's got. And then they get in, and they find out that it wasn't approved, and they've got to take it down. It costs them a ton of money.
Yeah, I think that's getting the specific contractual obligations and responsibilities, which I think is somewhat beyond the general culture of community association and that we're trying to build and maintain. Community associations do a great job of providing services economically for a much greater range of services oftentimes than are available to the individual homeowner, such as, you know, some of the amenity packages. They can't afford to do them by themselves, but as part of a community association, they can.
Do you get a tax break in Florida if you live in an association?
No. It's based on the market value. The real estate taxes are based on the market value of the unit.
Same here. So if you live in an association, you're basically being double taxed.
Not really, because the common elements are not taxed.
No, you are, because if you pay your taxes were originally designed to do things like provide streets, street lighting, snow removal where you have snow. I understand it's nice and warm in Florida right now. The basics, trash removal, the basic municipal functions. And if you don't live in an association, your taxes, and you're being taxed at the same rate, covers those services. Don't go away. We'll be back. We seem to be having some technical problems, but we'll be back with more with Mark in just a minute.
They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help! I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on The Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew. And joining us on The Commons today, we have Mark Benson. Mark is a CAM. He's actually a lot of things in Florida. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks again for having me, Sue.
Before we went on the break, we lost the power here, so that's why that's why it seems a little disjointed. I don't know if you remember what we were talking about, but I don't. So,
yeah, we were discussing the difference in tax assessments against condominium or homeowner associations and regular homes outside of associations.
That's
right. I think it would make a great comparison to see how it is in different jurisdictions. For instance, you mentioned up there that part of your real estate bill is your trash and things like that.
No, the way it works is, and you talked about your tax bill being based on the value of your house.
Market value of the unit.
Yeah. Right. And that's pretty much whether you live in an association or you don't live in an association, right?
No, as opposed to if you're not an association, the value of your home is based upon replacement cost as opposed to market value.
Replacement cost. And how does that compare to market value?
Well, theoretically, they're supposed to be pretty close. They're supposed to be about the same. I think it's a philosophical question as to whether or not they actually are or not, but it seems to work.
It seems to work well enough to fool the taxpayers. Is that it?
Government seems to think it works. I guess.
We're not
taxed on the common property. That's included in the.
I'm not talking about the common property. I'm talking about your unit or your house, whether you live in a single family home, a townhouse, or a condominium. Your taxes are based on the value of the property, whether it's replacement value or whether it's market value. Somehow it's value.
Yes.
It's the value. And pretty much it's going to be the same, right?
That's a theory, yeah.
Okay, pretty close. Mm-hmm. So your tax bill is going to be pretty much the same as well.
Yeah.
If you have a $100,000 house sitting in an association or a $100,000 house sitting in, not in an association, your tax bill is going to be based on the same $100,000.
Evaluation, right, correct.
So no matter what we call it.
Right, but the thing is that if you happen to have a golf course in your community and your home is still only $100,000, you're not charged any extra for the golf course.
But you could be right across the you'd have to pay the assessments to do
sure.
that.
Okay.
I mean, you could be right across the street from the country club and overlook a golf course as well and not own the golf course and not have your house. But basically what I'm trying to get at is that the value of your house, regardless,
mm-hmm.
The taxes are based on the value.
Correct.
And if you live in an association, then it's the association that is responsible for usually taking care of the streets, fixing the sidewalks, removing the trash, providing street lighting, and the usual municipal services.
Not as much in Florida, but it may be different in different jurisdictions. So I think that that's local jurisdictions, and it'd be an interesting exercise to see how those do compare. Yeah.
Well, in New Jersey, I think they've managed to get the local government to give some of it back. If your association picks up your trash, for instance, then
theoretically the county shouldn't charge you for that.
Well, what they're doing is they're charging you because they like to take your money.
But not in Florida.
But
in Florida they don't.
In Florida, they don't.
No.
Well, this is part of your tax, what your taxes pay. It's not an additional charge.
Yes, it is.
No. In some of these states, for instance,
okay,
in Virginia, it's not an, there's no additional charge for tax removal or for trash removal. It's part of your tax bill. There's no additional charge for street maintenance or street lighting. It's part of your taxes. So for those people, you're being double taxed, basically, because you're still paying your taxes, but then you're paying the association to provide the same services.
Not in Florida.
No, but we're looking at this on a national level.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and those are things that should be addressed in legislation. Yeah. And, the the people have got to stand up and let their legislators hear it.
Well, they are slowly.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I think in New Jersey they've got it so that the state reimburses or the localities reimburse associations for trash removal. In Massachusetts, they've been doing that. In some of the other states, they've been going in, but not on a major scale. They're going in after one thing and saying, you know, you've got to pay for our trash removal one way or the other.
Sure.
Either reimburse us or, you know, or pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's fairness that has to be analyzed in all of those. Now, if I could, back to what we're trying to do as far as CAMS in Florida, as far as 468, I think we've got a couple of people, and you mentioned, and you've had him on several times, Julio Urbana, who is a great champion for the rights of community association members.
Right.
And we understand he's taking a look at our proposals, and hopefully we'll be able to sponsor them this year. We also have part of the local legislative group here in Lee County, where I am, Senator Bert Saunders, who has always been a great supporter of community association progress, and also Dave Ehrenberg. Senator Dave Ehrenberg has also been a great supporter of community associations. So these are some of the guys that are looking at what we've got going on, and hopefully we'll be able to get their support to get some of these things done.
So who actually wrote this? I mean, is this part of the CAMS? Is this
the original drafting is something that I've been working on for the last several years and incorporates a lot of input from a lot of different people over the years, and it's been kind of a compilation. At the council meeting last week, the council did go over it and offered some great suggestions, which have been incorporated in the latest draft that we have going. The thing at this point is to get it in the hopper and get it moving, and if there are some specifics as issues, we can have those addressed as amendments, or you know, each affected party can bring them up as amendments with their representatives.
What's the biggest thing you hope to accomplish with this bill?
The licensure of management companies. That's what we think is really crucial.
And why is that crucial? What do you think what difference is that going to make?
As we mentioned before, we've had so many instances where someone will start a management company without a license and hire a licensed CAM as a front and offer management services, where in essence the principals of the company are not licensed and have not been investigated to provide the protection to the public. And I think we mentioned that earlier in the program, that's one of the things that we're trying to make sure that we can overcome.
That is crucial in your opinion?
Yes.
What else do you hope to accomplish with this bill?
Also changing from what is called a council to a board. In the state of Florida, we have two entities, councils and boards.
What's the difference?
A council is an advisory body created by statutory enactment to function for the study of problems arising in a specified program area of state government and to provide recommendations, whereas a board is an entity authorized to exercise regulatory and rulemaking functions within the department.
This is within the department. You're not...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is the...
Department of Business and Professional Regulation.
Okay, the DBPR.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. How else would this go about protecting? I mean, after all, when all is said and done, the individual homeowner should probably be the most important consideration out there. You want to make sure that the property is protected. Because if you can't do that, if you can't protect the rights of the individual, then, you know,
absolutely.
You might as well close shop and go home.
Yeah, and we have to tighten up the educational, not just the pre-licensure education that's necessary, but also the continuing education. One thing that it would be done in the rules, 468 would provide the authority to write the rules concerning education. And what we have to do there is make sure that the education that is being provided is relevant to the proper procedures and policies in managing community associations.
So this bill basically would be to, would regulate who, just the CAMs, the management companies, not
the managers and the management companies, yes.
Okay, not the DBPR, not within the DBPR.
Well, it is within the DBPR. It's part of the Division of Professional Regulation, yes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, the Division of Professions.
I'm looking here. I sort of read it very quickly earlier, and I took some notes on some of this stuff.
I would really invite, you know, anybody that wants to contribute to the to ideas to forward them to the Regulatory Council. I mean, we do have a web page.
You want to give us the URL for that?
Yeah, it's in the DBPR. You can start with myflorida.com.
Okay.
Go to the DBPR, and it's actually myflorida.com/DBPR.
Okay, tell you what, you can go to my website on thecommons.us, and I'll make sure that we have a link to it.
Okay, great.
And then you can send in things. In some of this stuff, you say the issues that the board shall consider include but are not limited to the rights and responsibilities of the unit owners in relation to the rights and responsibilities of the association and manager. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
We want to make sure that the managers understand.
I'm sorry, go on.
I think that was on your end, yeah. That the managers understand their responsibilities to the unit owners and that they understand their responsibilities to the community as a whole. There is one of the very difficult things that arise with managing community associations is boards of directors who do not understand their responsibilities and can intimidate managers into doing things that are probably not appropriate, just to cover their, you know, just to save their jobs. And we want to make sure that managers are accountable for the actions of their clients or the association that they manage. If the association is being disciplined for failure to operate properly, the manager must be able to accept some of that responsibility if, in fact, he has some responsibility for the actions.
So you're holding them accountable, basically.
We hope so. Yes, that's what we want to do, yes.
Wow. That is a huge step forward, because usually all the documents that I've ever seen has sort of held the managers harmless and the attorneys harmless. It was like, oh, well, you know, we're just acting as agents here. So that's a great step, I think.
Yeah.
Mark, that's a huge step forward.
The association might do something wrong, but the manager's got to make sure that they advise them properly and cover themselves and tell them that they're doing it wrong. They can't just sit idly by and let it happen.
So you're giving them not only more, you're giving them more responsibility and you're holding them accountable.
Yes.
And usually the boards come on and they really don't know what they're doing, so they tend to look to the managers and look to them for advice.
And that's why we have to increase the educational depth for managers so that they're able to provide that guidance to the boards.
How long do you think it's going to take to get to that point? how long? I mean, you've
how,
got,
how long before we get out of Iraq? I don't.
Yeah, know. Yeah, basically, basically, because I think you've got some great ideas. I think you've got some really good ideas, and I applaud you for wanting to clean up the act. I mean, I've always wondered why CAI has gone around and the industry members have gone around making excuses for their ineptness instead of saying, you know what, this is really not what we want to be associated with. We really want to be taken as serious professionals. People, you know, with
and the only way we can do that is to be accountable for what we do.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I applaud you for seeing it that way, and I applaud you for doing something about it.
Well, it's not done yet.
No, I realize that. And it's going to take a while because you've got a lot of managers out there that have been doing this for a very long time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And some of them are... How do you propose going back and making sure that everybody is, in fact, licensed and educated and knows what they're doing and is up on all the new laws and understands what's happening?
There are specific requirements in the rules as to the amount of continuing education that's required. I would propose that that part of the function of the DBPR or the Bureau of Professions is to audit these courses that are going on to make sure that the proper information is getting to the managers. We need courses in business law. We need courses in business ethics. Rather than getting lectures from an aluminum siding salesman and calling it continuing education.
Is that what's happening now?
Well, yeah, we have product providers providing continuing education.
You're kidding.
Roofers and you know, they can give good information, but I don't think that's what we're looking for as far as continuing education.
No. Did you say there is a requirement for CAMS to be licensed? Yes. No.
Yes.
So you're not going to run into mom and pop who've been, you know, managing associations for the last 30 years and, you know, they're doing a good job based on, you know, based on
the association they work for, yeah.
And you know, they may have done a great job and they may be doing a very good job and they're not part of the problem. But are you going to make them go back and get licensed and take the education? And
they already have to be licensed in Florida. They already have to be licensed if the association's over 50 units and the budget's over 40.
But if it's under 50 units?
If it's less than 50 units, we're trying to change that also.
Okay, so you're going to go in. So now you've got something. Is anybody going to be grandfathered in? Now you've got somebody who's been managing three associations, small associations, and they've been doing a relatively good job. They're not a whole lot of problems and issues there, and they've been honest and.
If he's a good manager, it shouldn't make any difference. We're trying to keep out the bad ones.
No, I understand. But are you going to grandfather them in, or is there going to be a requirement for them to go through and take all the classes and courses?
Yeah, there aren't that many of them. Yes.
And there are some
yes,
of
they
them.
Should be, they should be licensed, yes.
Okay.
If they're handling other people's money, they should be licensed.
So there's no grandfathering in. Nobody's going to come in and say, well, you've been doing it for 20 years, you're grandfathered in.
No.
We'll just give you a license, and you're going to, you know, go to the country. Huh?
You have to take the test.
You have to take the test. You have to pass it.
We all did in 1988. We all did.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Everybody. So that's how long you've been licensed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How long is the continuing education now? How many hours? And how often?
Well, it's the license is every 2 years. And I think it's... our continuing education is, well, that's in the rules. I think it's 10 hours a year.
That's it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gosh, what can you learn in 10 hours a year?
My wife's still working on me.
Oh, good one, Mark. in your in your bill here, your proposed bill, you talk about requiring notification of managers or firms, clients of disciplinary action.
I don't think that provision is probably not going to be in the final draft. That came about because of a complaint from the Bureau of Condominiums that they had found out in certain cases about some illegal or inappropriate activities by certain managers, and they wanted the ability to find out if the same thing was happening with this manager's other accounts. But in further consideration, the regulatory council didn't feel that that would be appropriate, that there would be other ways we could, if there's a problem, that we could find out who they are.
If there's a problem with the accounts, if somebody comes up with, turns in an association that is being managed by a management company, I realize that the new laws that the new pilot program has turned up mostly association board members who have been doing the embezzling.
Right.
But it's fascinating to think that these guys have been getting that, millions of dollars.
And my question always is, every time I see one of those cases, I say, do they have a manager? Where was their manager?
Where was their manager, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Julio was on and he told, one day, and he said that one of the people who was caught, president or whoever, in a condominium, not only had embezzled and had taken all the money, but the other thing that they had done was they had special assessed the units to collect something like $14 million to do some major repairs that only really cost $4 million. So they were special, they were special assessing in excess of $10 million.
Yeah.
And that was going to their pockets. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
And my point in that is, where was their manager?
Where was their manager? Why wasn't the manager handling it?
Yeah.
I know.
There's got to be some culpability, some negligence there someplace. It seems, well, I guess, with Enron and those guys, I guess it's possible, but that's another one of my pet peeves is the CPAs and what they do for associations, and that they don't really provide the type of investigative protection for associations that I'd like to see or that we feel is appropriate. And they'll be the first ones to tell you that. That's not what they're hired for. They're hired to do an audit, which is not supposed to find crimes. It's not supposed to find mistakes. It's supposed to give you a picture of what the financial situation is of the association. But I think there should be a greater degree of responsibility involved with that, too.
Is there an annual audit requirement in Florida?
Only if the income of the association is over $400,000. Otherwise, you can get by with a compilation or a review based upon the annual income of the association. But the association members may waive that every year if they want.
Why would they want to do that?
Because they don't want to pay for it.
Oh,
if it costs $5,000 for an audit, they say, we can do a lot more better than that with our $5,000. Oftentimes, it's a matter of cost, and do you want to spend $5,000 for an audit or do you want to waive the audit? That's the question that they get. And there are some proposals out there that make audits mandatory after a couple of years or something like that. And the only fault I find with that is that you're not going to find the information in an audit that you're looking for.
Well, what I learned when I was on the board was that the information's in the management letter. The audit itself is going to give you numbers, and you can do the math all day long, but what you're really going to find out is in the management letter. And what happens quite often is the board members never get the management letter.
Right.
It goes through the office. It goes either through the treasurer or the manager, and the manager decides we're not going to provide them with a management letter. That says you ought to look into this, that, and the other. So anyway, for those of you listening in make sure you get a copy of the management letter. That's where you're going to find all the juicy stuff.
If they even provide one.
Oh, don't! I thought it was a requirement to provide one.
No, you have to ask for it.
You have to ask for a management letter. Ask for a management letter, folks. Find out what's going on in your association. Good luck with this. I think it looks like a good start.
Well, let's hope so. It's always a work in progress.
And thank you for sticking with me. I know we had some technical problems, but I appreciate the fact that you stuck with me and you were available to do the show.
Our pleasure, our pleasure. And if anybody needs to get a hold of me, please feel free to give them our contact numbers.
I will. What I will do is I will make sure that we have some of that information on the website, and so they can get through to you. Should I give them your email address?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mark, thank you so much for joining
us.
Thanks to all of you.
We look forward to your broadcast.
I'll make sure you get a notice of it so that you can tune in and listen in.
Okay, thanks.
And thanks to all of you for joining us today. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. We'll see you all next week.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.